Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. Hey, besties.
Hi, besties.
Welcome back. We are so excited to be back with you. And although we know you really enjoyed our last episode of just keeping up with the come up, we're so excited to have a guest on today.
Yes. So exciting.
So today we're going to be introducing the lovely Maisie Crandall. Hello, Maisie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm so great. Thanks for joining us in the studio today.
It's truly my pleasure.
I'm excited.
We're going to have a great discussion with Maisie. She is one of those people who's so multifaceted, and so we have a lot to get through. So why don't we just jump right in?
Yeah, let's buckle up. Yeah. All right. Let's, you know, get into it. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up. Are you a Toledo native?
Yeah, so I grew up in Sylvania, Ohio. I actually went elementary through high school with Riley.
Sylvania nice. Represents.
Sylvania, rise up. but yeah, I just Toledo native, hung out. Back.
I love that. So true. And, you know, we usually kind of skip through the whole, like, pre-college discussion just because we like to talk more about what Gen Zers are doing now. But I want to kind of take it a little bit back to your high school days because you went to Northview High School and you played a pretty unique sport in high school.
I did.
So we want to talk about how Maisie was on the boys hockey team at Northview. So obviously, like most high schools do not have a girls hockey team, but Maisie was just so incredible at the sport that she got to be on the boys team. And so I want you to talk a little bit about your experience playing hockey in high school.
Right, you're making me blush. yeah, so I think high school hockey, I grew up playing with the boys, so like until this point, like it wasn't really like anything major. I didn't really think of it being any different. The boys are great. I love the boys. I think that there was some hesitation on whether I could play or not at that level, which was really hard to manage. And then also just being a young woman in a locker room sometimes was also pretty difficult. So
yeah.
But I'd say overall, it was pretty, I mean, I had great friends to help me and a great faculty at school. So I think it was a pretty positive experience. But
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very interesting conversation to talk about being a woman in any male dominated industry, but especially the conversation about being a woman. I mean, even the locker room point, like having to, I mean, did you have a separate space where you had to get ready for the games or like were you in there with the boys? Like talk a little bit about what it was like for you to be a woman in a male dominated sport.
Right. So for the locker room, we had a coach's room separate from the main locker room. Mm-hmm. And I got dressed in the coach's room, which looking back seems pretty weird now that I say that out loud. But it was actually really fine because it locked like both sides. So like I'd be in there by myself.
That's good.
The overall, though, like, I mean, the boys are my best friends. I mean, most of them I grew up with for a very long time. And then my senior year, I was able to play with my little brother. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty awesome as well.
Yeah,
and then all
so
of his
special.
Right. Yeah. And so it was cool to share that moment with him. And then all of his friends were also my friends because we grew up together. It was pretty hard. They are kind of crazy.
Do you feel like it gave you kind of like a unique set of skills for the game? Like, I mean, I don't really know the experience that you had with other women hockey players and if they grew up kind of doing the same thing, being on the boys' teams and stuff like that. But for you, talk about what that was like to, you know, gain all of that experience playing with these guys who you had to constantly be proving yourself.
Playing the girls' game is, like, pretty fundamentally different. I mean, the girls, like, can't hit. I mean, they can hit. Like, there's body contact, I think, is the rule.
Yeah.
But, like, not body checking. So they are a lot more technical and I think deliberate in their movements where I think guys, it's almost like more reckless because you don't have to like stick check, you just check.
Right.
So I think there's like a little bit more almost like it's very delicate in a really cool and fascinating way when you look at it like almost like it's art.
Yeah.
When you play with the girls. But the guys is also just so much fun because it's so fast paced.
Right.
Like you always have to be thinking ahead. You always have to think 2-3 moves ahead. So I think it made me a better player in that I could read the game really well because I had to.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think it made me a lot smarter because I was 5'6" playing against 6-foot guys. Like I just had to keep my head on a swivel and like think ahead a little bit. So
especially with Hart saying the men's game being very physical, it's you kind of have to just get right in there.
You just got to do it.
And yeah. I wonder if this is kind of like a theme among men and women's sports, because I noticed that exactly what you described with basketball. Yeah. I see a lot in men's basketball that it's a lot faster paced, but it's a lot more like reckless or rough kind of, you know, yeah. like they're constantly just trying to drive right to the hoop. Whereas like the women slow the game down. They play deliberately. They run plays. They're strategic. And I find that so interesting, like that different kind of level of thinking between the two.
Right. And it's not to say, like, I love, like, the recklessness of it, too. Like, it's so fun to play that way.
Right.
But there is just something to be said about how, like, deliberate women play their sports.
For sure.
And I think it's so cool to watch, like, when you take that lens and apply it to, like you said, basketball or soccer. I think it's really fun to sit back and just analyze it from that perspective.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you were on the guys' team in high school, like, what were some of the bigger challenges that you faced?
To get right out swinging, I played JV my freshman year, and I like to think I was pretty good. I led or was
can confirm I did watch her play. She's very good.
Thanks for the hype, girl. I like led in points or like was second in points. Like I was killing it. I had a lot
That's
of fun.
Awesome.
Yeah, and going into my sophomore year, I was like on cloud nine, ready for the season. Went through tryouts, felt really good, and then I was pulled into the coach's office last. So everyone has gone through their interviews, and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like I'm a sophomore.
Right.
What could they possibly want me for? And I remember they took, like, me in. It was, like, the entire coaches panel, JV, varsity, everyone. And the coach at the time was like, I am going to be honest. Like, I don't think, like, we can put you on varsity. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
What do you mean? And he was essentially like, well, you're a girl. We're afraid you're going to get hurt. And that was the only excuse that he gave me. Like, there wasn't anything I could change. It wasn't anything I could work harder at. It wasn't anything I could practice. It was just, hey, we're worried about you. So we're just going to prevent you this opportunity, even though all of your friends, all of your teammates from last year are, like, moving on and taking steps and, like, getting better.
And at that point, you had the talent to do that.
And at that point, like, I was right up there with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think I felt so deflated. I think I literally went to school. Shout out Amy Schlegel, if you've ever listened to this. I sat in your room and cried at school. And then I think I made a decision for, like, the first time ever. This is the first time anything like this has ever happened to me, like, usually it wasn't, like, a big deal. Like, I knew I was the only girl, but it was never, like, hindering me from, like, moving forward and doing what I loved.
Yeah.
So I think I made the decision then to be, like, I'm not accepting this. And I think it was the first time I really took a stand for, like, myself and my mind.
Awesome.
And I went, and I was like, no. Like, you're going to listen to me. You're going to sit down, and I'm not going to get hurt, and I'm going to prove it to you whether you like it or not.
I just got chills.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
I think the varsity coach at the time was like, okay, yeah, I'll hear you out. He came to, like, one practice and was like, yeah, like, this is ridiculous. And then offered me at least a taxi position, I think. And then I eventually worked my way up and got my first varsity game later in the year.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
You did.
And so important to be able to say that for yourself. Like, you can't tell me that I can't do it because you're afraid. If I'm not afraid myself.
Yeah,
right.
If I'm not afraid, and I will take this wherever I need to take it. I was the only one to never get hurt playing high school.
So true.
I never had an injury.
I
never missed a game injury.
So true.
Concussions, whatever. I was the only one to play.
Yeah, that's just the icing on the cake.
Maybe that's
right.
Because you had the recklessness and the physicality of the guys' team, but then you had the deliberance and strategy of a girls' team. Interesting.
Crazy, right?
Crazy combining those talents.
Right, but yeah. So I think, I don't know. I think that's like, I like to hang my hat on that. Well, it was, like, it was really important to me because I don't know if this is, like, a thing, but, like, sometimes in Sylvania, I was like, oh, like, I am just going through Sylvania things. I think this is the first time I really was like, I'm going to be an advocate for myself.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, that's what I was going to say is you're not only standing up for yourself to be on a team and play a sport that you love, but you're also learning that skill of standing up for yourself
right.
in general.
I was going to ask that, too. Do you think that experience has helped you in any other aspects?
For sure. I think it was the start of, even if I didn't realize it, me being like, I'm not going to put up with things that I just can't accept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that has carried me through my degree, that has carried me through even college hockey of, like, even though I played with the women, it was like, oh, there's still things that, like, go on where I'm like, no, like, I I don't get it, so I'm going to fight for what I think and at least my opinion to be heard.
Right. And you have had to consistently throughout your life learn to stand up for yourself. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about politics, and because you studied politics in college, we're going to talk a little bit about that later. But I mean, even when you were in high school and like entering college, you were starting to kind of come to grips with your sexuality as a lesbian woman and trying to figure out, you know, how you were going to, in, you know, Sylvania is a little bit more of like a heterosexual environment, right? And so trying to figure out how you were going to stand up for yourself and navigate that. So I would imagine that the experience of standing up for yourself as a woman in a male space also kind of carried over to then you standing up for yourself as a queer woman in a heterosexual space.
Oh, for sure. And I think the important thing about like learning to advocate for yourself is that I'm like, you still do it.
Right.
So I think like even recently, I mean, I've always been proud of my sexuality, but I think even recently, I've really just been like, no, I'm doing whatever I want. I'm not harming anyone. It's just who I am. Like, so I won't apologize and won't walk back on who I am for your comfort.
Right.
I love that. And that's so important.
Yeah. And I think it's been really important to me, like, over this last year, too. Like, there's been a lot of things that have kind of gone on for me. But I think what it has done is it's given me the space to really reflect on what I want in my life and where I'm headed. And I think that's helped with the advocacy part as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we want to come back to the advocacy portion of this and the, you know, discourse conversation a little bit later. But we do want to go back and talk a little bit about going from Northview to then you ended up going to the University of Miami.
Yeah, talk to us about that. You know, what did you study and what do you think really drew you to Miami University?
Oh, guys, I'm so glad we brought this up. I don't know. I was the oldest kid. I didn't know where I wanted to go to school. Mm-hmm. Even going into senior year, I knew I wanted to play hockey, but also, like, I played with the boys. Like, no one's really coming to watch the girl on a boys' varsity team in Ohio. Mm. Like, truly. I mean, there's so many great clubs in Michigan and Minnesota and all these places, Boston. Like, there's so many great programs, AAA, Travel League. So I knew that I needed to prioritize my education probably over anything, and I still didn't know what I wanted to do. My Aunt Sue went to Miami.
Shout out Aunt Sue.
Shout out Aunt Sue, me and Riley's second grade teacher.
Second grade teacher.
And I think one day she was like, hey, like, I'm going to head down. Like, would you be interested? And I was kind of like reaching out to the coach was Scott at the time. And I was like, yeah, like, I'll come down and like have a little visit. And I went down there with her and Emma. And it literally changed my life. I walked on campus and I was like, no, like, something magical is going to happen here.
Yeah.
And I think it did. I love Miami. I love my girl. Shout out Miami Women's Hockey. You guys are the best. I miss you. But yeah, I studied political science. I got my bachelor's and my master's in political science. And then I played women's hockey. I adore them. I miss them every day.
Yeah. Talk about why you chose political science then. I mean, obviously hockey was a priority and you fell in love with the women's hockey team there. But what about political science really came to you?
Yeah, I was actually just having this conversation last night because we were talking about someone going into college. And I was like, no, I changed my major probably 3 times the first semester.
Right.
I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew what I liked learning about. And mm-hmm. I think for me, that's what was most important.
That's very relatable. Yeah. That was my experience, too. I was like, I don't know where I want to end up, but I know that this is what I'm enjoying for right now.
And I don't think we've ever had anybody on the podcast. We've had a lot of people talk about changing their major, but I don't think we've ever had anybody put it like that. Like, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew what I wanted to learn about. I think that's really prolific.
I always said, like, there's one thing about me, like, I just love learning. Like, if I could be a student for the rest of my life, I would be completely content.
Truth.
So I was like, no, like, if I'm going to sit in a classroom, I don't know what I'm going to do. There's so many options, but something will fall into my lap if I'm doing what I care about.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's really awesome.
And my best subjects, the ones that I always was most fascinated about was history, APUSH in high school, like government with, and it was just like, I loved learning about it. I loved the space and I loved the debate. Like, I loved the fact that there wasn't a truth in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I loved like just hearing every story, every side, and like the ability to make conclusions and to just keep learning.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, in all of your advocacy for yourself, like, you are so fascinated by these debates where people are advocating for their beliefs.
Right.
And so I feel like, of course, like, it's a natural correlation that you would be so invested in something where there's such a huge advocacy component.
Yeah, I think that is the most interesting part, is like, I love just hearing what people have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some people, that's not for them. Like, things have to be very black and white, like, right or wrong. Mm-hmm. But I love that you're able to find that and exist within that space that there is no right answer.
Right. And, like, I don't know. Like, I have, like, my moral stances and whatnot. But, like, also, like, I do love just, like, hearing what people have to say, because I think if you can't hear what people have to say, then you almost lose, like, the ability to, like, build off of things.
Yeah. Well, and we just talked about this in our last episode, just me and Libby. We were discussing how there's not a lot of space for conversation with decorum these days. And it's so interesting for somebody like you who is in the stereotypical generation of, like, you know, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to stand up for what I believe in, and that's going to be that, da da da. It's fascinating for somebody of your age, like, we're all three of us are the same age. It's fascinating to hear how you are just so willing and able to have these hard discussions without making it into a problem for anybody else, or, you know, trying to change someone's beliefs or letting them change yours.
Right. And I think that's, like, a lesson that you have to learn too. And I think that does stem kind of back to hockey. Like, I didn't have to like what they said, but I did have to hear what they were saying, because in that is, like, what needed to happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think, like, and hard conversations, you kind of just learn to have them, especially in those classes, especially in, you go through life and, like, you either have those conversations or you don't. But I think everyone's a lot better for having hard conversations.
Well, and, you know, things happen for a reason. So it's like, maybe, I mean, you're an extremely hard worker, but maybe had you have just been put on the varsity, no problem, you wouldn't have worked as hard. You wouldn't have pushed yourself the way that you did.
No, truly. I think about that a lot. And I think it gave me, I think I was floating through life in a way where I was like, yeah, like, I didn't have any quorum. Like, I had no problems in something. And, like, I was just hanging out, doing my thing. And it was almost a wake-up call to, like, oh, this is real life. Like, you are living life, and you need to figure out the hard things.
For sure.
And I love that, too, being able to hear people out and listen to what they're saying, but also you're not letting your bottom line waver.
Like, right.
You can hear what they're saying, but your ultimate decision, you're going to stand up for yourself. And that's so important.
Definitely. And, you know, we want to come back to politics, obviously, and talk a little bit about navigating those conversations. But first, I want to go back to your continued hockey career on the Miami women's team. I know you're so passionate about talking about your team, and you had such a wonderful experience there. So I you know, you can talk a little bit about your general experience, but I mostly just want to know what that transition was like for you to go from playing with all guys to then having a team of all girls.
Oh my gosh. I love them now. I do love them. It was a really hard thing to do, though, because it's everything is different a little bit, right? And I think that I got so used to playing with the guys and being in that atmosphere that when I went to the girls, it was really different. Like, I grew up having mostly guy friends because that's who I hung out with all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think playing with the girls, it was like, there's, like, almost a vulnerability that you can have with them that you can't have playing with the guys in a way,
mm-hmm.
that I had to learn that it was, like, okay to do.
Yeah.
So I think it was, like, the vulnerability of being, like, oh, I can, like, really be myself. Like, I – not to say that I wasn't myself with the guys, but there is, like, you have to, like, put on almost, like, a front of, like
– yeah, like, I'm, a hard shell of, like, protecting yourself in that space in a way.
Like, a faux confidence in a way or, like, a faux – and it's like, I was confident. I was pretty good, and I deserve to be there, I promise.
For sure.
No, but I think this is really relatable to a lot of women in any industry.
It's actually, like, there's this show, there's this musical that does this, like, great example of this, where it's like, you know, if you ask a woman if she thinks she's going to win a competition, she'll be very humble in her response and say, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to win, but I've prepared, and, like, hopefully things will work out in my favor. But then really on the inside, they're thinking, oh, I'm taking you all down. Like, this is going to be great, blah, blah, blah. But then for men, sometimes it can be on the outside, there's that shell of, you know, oh, I'm taking you all down, I'm going to win. But then on the inside, they're having those doubts of, you know, I'm not really sure. Like, I think I've prepared. It's kind of like a little reverse psychology situation almost.
Yeah. And, like, with the guys, like I said, like, I grew up with them. So, like, I did have some vulnerability, like, of course, like, they're my besties. But it was just, like, the environment itself.
Yeah.
Like, the environment, you're supposed to be, like, hardened, like, badass, like, attitude. And it's hockey.
Right.
So, and it's guys hockey. You're hitting, there's fights. Like, you just have to, like, kind of, like, put up with, I can do it, whatever. With the girls, you still have all those aspects, but, like, you can be like, oh, I'm not really having a great, like, game, or, like, I'm not, like, and they pick you up, I think, a little bit more, like, relatably. Yeah.
Was it easier for you to admit to mistakes or shortcomings when you would, you know, maybe screw up during a game and throw off a teammate or something versus when you were on the men's team?
Oh, for sure. I didn't actually realize it until you said it just now, but, like, for sure. Well, because if you think back on it, when I was playing guys, like, they already gave an excuse that I couldn't be there from the start.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So every mistake I made was so analyzed. It was so highlighted mm-hmm. in any capacity that I felt the need to be perfect all the time.
Right.
And that's not really like a great standard to be up to, especially when you're
not sustainable long term. Right.
Right. Not at all.
And it's like
quick burnout.
Yeah. And you're a kid. Like yeah. you're a high school kid and you're just expected to be perfect. You're expected to look the part. You're expected to just be happy that you're there.
Right.
And you still have to be perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Given that you're still like not even receiving the same like coaching.
Right.
And so I think going to Miami, like I could be like, oh yeah, I made a mistake. Like I messed up. Or, oh, I can be better. And it's like, yeah, because you can be better because we know you and we're going to support you. It's not like.
Yeah.
You have that support system that made it a ton better.
Well, and this is not a call out question, but you mentioned coaching and now I'm curious. Do you find that your college coaches were more attentive to helping you better your skills than your high school coaches were?
In some capacity, yes. I think I had a really good – the varsity coach my sophomore year was – he was really quick to own up and he was like, we are going to make it – we're going to make it work. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the case necessarily in later years. In the later years, it was more of like, oh, you messed up, or oh, you caused something else to happen, which caused someone else to mess up. And it got so far outside of me
yeah.
that it was even less of something that I could control.
Right.
So that wasn't necessarily great. And then when you get to Miami, it's like, oh, yeah, you messed up, but like, how can I help? Like, how can I help mm-hmm. you? Even if I didn't agree with a game plan. Like,
yeah.
he's still there to support you. He's still there to help you.
Well, and maybe I'm naive for viewing it this way, but I've always kind of viewed high school athletics as you're working to train the kid, not only in their, like the coaches, I mean, are working to train the kids, not only in their skill, but as a person. There's so much personal development that exists within high school athletics. I mean, I've watched this. My dad went from coaching professional baseball where it was, you know, he wanted to help these players, but they're in the pros, like they're at the top of their game. The focus there is more the strategy of the game and winning games and getting to the World Series for baseball. But then when he's at the Northview team and coaching these Northview high school kids, he's more focused on, okay, let me help you better your skills so maybe you could get into this college or, you know, grow as a person. Like he would ask them how their homework was coming along or like what they were going to study and things like that. Like there's such a difference, I think, even from the high school to the collegiate level, where it's like in the high school level, I think the coaches should be more focused on that personal growth mm-hmm. and development versus at the collegiate level, where it is a little bit more about winning and, you know, trying to better the team as a whole, if that makes sense, you know?
Right. I talk about this with my mom all the time, watching my brother play his sports, because mm-hmm. he plays multiple sports, and it's like from sport to sport, it's hard with the coaches, and it's where one will be so focused on winning and just getting the end game. But it's high school, and it's like, let's focus on sportsmanship and developing these kids.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, it's definitely very relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we talked a lot about your high school and your college experience, but let's jump into the present, babe.
Yeah, what are you up to now?
Yeah, so then after college, like I said, I got my master's and I needed an internship, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And I stumbled into, it's called Charity Navigator, mm-hmm. and it is a nonprofit based in New Jersey. And I got an internship there, and then I actually got hired full-time after graduation. So now I work there as an alert systems analyst.
Yes, alert systems analyst.
Explain to me what that means.
I was like, yes.
like, I'm 2 years old.
Yeah, like, it's definitely not me who doesn't understand it. But, like, just for those who might not understand it, like, could you explain?
Oh, guys, I wish I could. it's so niche. It's so crazy. So basically what I do is our nonprofit – in general, Charity Navigator looks at other nonprofits, 990s, and mm-hmm. evaluates them. So the goal is to keep, like, giving up to the donors, giving them all the information that they can before they donate.
Okay.
So they analyze the 990s for, like, fiscal health, a lot of other things that I don't know how to do. But what I do know how to do is the alerts, which I go – we have, like, news nets. So, like, I look at the news all day.
Mm-hmm.
And I see if a nonprofit has committed what we call misbehaviors. So, like, embezzlement, fraud, any kind of, like, abuse or scandal. And I essentially put it into a document. It gets voted on by a committee of people. And then we put it on the website if we deem it a reliable source and think that the information is the best it can be. And essentially what that does is it just keeps donors informed. So when they go to our website, they're like, hey, this nonprofit has a history of perhaps embezzlement. Maybe we should be a little wary of donating to them at this time until they have like a new CEO or a new board or whatever.
Well, and that's such an interesting conversation about ethics, because obviously, like, as a political science major for both your undergrad and graduate, kind of taking the ethical component of that and then applying it to this job, even though it's not necessarily directly in a political realm, is really fascinating.
Yeah, I never thought I was going to be working at a nonprofit, but like I said, I didn't know what I was going to want to do. And then this kind of fell in my lap, and I truly love it. And I think the ethical component of my degree is what really did shine for me. It just felt like something I could be really passionate in and very confident in. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of led me to what I'm doing now.
How do you feel like your poli-sci degree has kind of helped you navigate that workplace environment? I know you work remotely, but still, just, you know, working with your coworkers or just with the material in general.
Well, I think less to do with my major, but more to do with the circumstance of the time, is that I was remote for some of college, most of college. And then I transitioned right into a remote workspace. So I think I had a lot of learning curve, because it went from students that I kind of already knew from my classes and we were just like remote to not knowing all of these adults who have been working in the sector for a long time from across the country that now I have to meet with. So I think it was almost, like I said, a wake-up call as well to like, oh, this is work, but it's not necessarily the traditional workplace. But that being said, like poli-sci, you have to have a lot of hard conversations. You have to learn how to handle a lot of conversations and express your beliefs, but be respectful. And I think in any workplace, those are great skills to have, is listening to people.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it's almost like you're, sorry.
No, you're fine.
It's almost like you're taking your skills for advocating for yourself, then to advocate for donors and look out for these nonprofits who are maybe not doing the best job.
Yeah. Advocacy has been your invisible string theory all
along. I know,
I
love this.
The more we're talking, the more I'm like, wow, advocacy is really coming up a lot here. But yeah, I think it's too important. Like, it's not even against nonprofits. Like, the nonprofit sector, like, I love, but like, guys, if you're doing things, like, just fix it, please. And then it'll be gone, I promise.
You're like, just be ethical, I beg.
Just
I literally
be
beg.
Ethical, I beg.
So a little bit of a harder question is then, with your poli-sci degree, how I should preface by saying we grew up in an area that was a little bit mixed in terms of political beliefs. I would say, you know, a little bit more like conservative or right leaning. And, you know, we don't have to get into personal politics here. But I am just curious as to how you have kind of grown your own beliefs. Like, obviously, you've been listening to these new perspectives. You've come up with your own moral compass. Now, how do you apply that to these difficult conversations that you have to have with people who definitely do not agree with the things that you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think with me, at least, like, in terms of growth, right? Like, I think, like I said, growing up in Sylvania, it's almost like this bubble to the real world.
Yeah.
And my bubble, theoretically, conceptually, was popped when I had my wake-up call in high school. And it's like, no, this is the real world. Like, even outside of Sylvania, like, other things are going on.
Definitely. Right.
And I think that I took that lesson and then moved it to college, and I met people. I think one of my best friends, like, grew up in, like, Manhattan. Like, one of my best friends, like, they're from, like, California. They're from all across the country. Mm-hmm. And just to hear of the world outside of where you grew up is such a liberating experience.
Yeah,
definitely.
And I just was so fascinated by it. And I was like, even if I don't agree or even if I have questions, like, just the ability to sit back and hear how you grew up and hear your story in your hometown – and just realizing that there's so much more than just this area.
Yeah.
It was just so fascinating to me. And I think I took that into my own personal beliefs. And then coming back, I think it's just a wake-up call to be like, oh, like, I don't even know if people really get this. So, like, I'll talk. Because not that I can talk for other people, but I'm like, oh, there's so many other things going on. Like, did you guys know about this or did you hear about this?
It is interesting. I will say, like, I can't imagine what it's like to grow up somewhere like a bigger city, you know, like in New York City or Los Angeles or something like that, where you are constantly in a melting pot of different perspectives. Yeah. Whereas for us, we kind of had to leave to get that perspective, right? And so I do want to mention, you after college did move to Texas for a while and you lived there. And then, so when Maisie says she was away from Sylvania for a while, she not only went to Miami University, but then also moved to Texas, getting more worldviews and more cultures. And then in a pretty cool area in Austin, I might add. But then she came back to Sylvania and has been working her job remotely. But it's interesting that you talk about the bubble of Sylvania, because that kind of was my next question, which is, you and I have known each other our whole lives. We've had so many long discussions about this almost cyclical nature of our hometown, which is like, you know, we see a lot of people maybe leave for school or maybe not, because we do have a lot of great universities here that people can go to and, you know, save money, live at home, etc. But I think it's really interesting to watch people come back and fall into a particular pattern rather than try to be a mover and shaker. And not saying that everybody has to be, you know, up and at 'em every day trying to change the world, change the city, etc. But I do find that there is almost this like negative sort of culture around moving back to your hometown because of this type of nature. And so, you know, I want to talk to you about, after going to Miami University, after going to Texas and coming back, how do you feel that you can be somebody in this area to help change that cycle?
Dude, I love this question.
Oh
my God, I love the way your mind just works, actually. Let me just gas you up a little bit. But yeah, we had so many discussions about this, and I think it's so interesting because I think it just depends on the person, right? Like, I think some people just, like, they want to go and they want to be movers and they want to be shakers and they want to whatever. I was one of those people. I want to move and shake. So yeah. I think coming back, and it also, I think it really stems from being confident in myself. Mm-hmm. And not to say that people aren't, but, like, I came back and I was like, I know who I am. I know who I want to be. And even if that's not a dream job or a dream whatever, like, I know where I want to be in the world, where I want to fit in, and what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So I think coming back with that confidence of just knowing who I am for, like, the first time, I think, in a really long time.
Yeah.
And, like, the ability to grow. And like I said, like, I don't know, shout out therapy. I've been in therapy. Right. Like, therapy for, like, however many months now. And it has literally, like, fundamentally, like, shifted how I view things. And, like, I was once one of those people where I was like, I'm going to leave my hometown. I'm not going to come back. But coming back, I think, in a way, has, like, really saved me. Because it, reconnecting with you, like, being with my family, like, there's been so many upsides and experiences that I'm just so thankful for. And, like, I still am the mover shaker. I still am exactly who I want to be. And then I can still have all these wonderful experiences with people I really love.
Absolutely. And I think you really hit the nail on the head with the conversation of, it's about expanding people's worldview, right?
Yeah.
Like, you might not be able to completely change this culture of people who are, you know, content to stay in their bubble and never pop it and never
really
understand.
Really quick, I want to say, too, this is not exclusive to just Sylvania.
Oh, no, not at all.
No. This is really true and relatable for a lot of people leaving their hometowns or any kind of smaller hometown.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, you have to get out there and see something different, and then your whole worldview kind
of shifts. No, you're right. And that's why, to me, I definitely feel, I feel a lot of empathy for people and sometimes sympathy for people who don't ever try to expand their worldview.
Yeah.
Because it's not about the financial element of, like, travel, or which is travel and moving and doing all these things. That's great. But a lot of people are not afforded that opportunity. So I think what people can do to combat that is have these tough conversations, read the news, understand what's going on in places that are, you know, not where you are living. Because obviously, if you're embedded in a culture, you're going to kind of get the culture. Mm-hmm. So it's like, work harder to understand other people's perspectives. And I love that that is such a key point for you, and that you, no matter what people say around you, are constantly driving that point home to people.
Yeah, I think it's actually, in terms of my queerness too, like, coming back and being confident in that and in myself for, like I said, the first time in a while, like, I've just really owned it.
Yeah.
And it's been really fun. But, like, even then, hearing how it's, like, affected my parents. Like, my dad yesterday made a joke about someone being a beard.
You're like, hey, Matt, what?
Yeah, and it's just, like, to hear that. And, like, my, like, little brother, like, asking questions. And I'm like, no, like, you guys, like, it's something, like, you just didn't know. So now that, like, you've had that basis and, like, something to, like, have a foundation of, like, you're learning, even if you don't know. And it's not like I'm supposed to teach you, like, a lesson per se, but, like, you're expanding your vocabulary. You're expanding, like, how you see things. And I think that's also so cool.
And I will shout out your brother and your parents, because I know when you first came out, you were very, very afraid of the reception and how that would go over. Just because, I mean, there's not a lot of queer people in our community growing up. And so I will shout out the fact that your parents and your brother have asked a lot of questions, done a lot of research, have definitely really embraced you. And I think that that, in and of itself, like, they love you no matter what. So obviously, you being who you are in and of itself is expanding their worldview.
Right. And I think that's just, like, the thing of, like, whenever you, like, kind of, like, quote unquote, like, come out, like, you're always, like, a little nervous, especially, like, with the area or whatever. Like, I know my parents love me, like, from the start. Like, I mean, they're pretty cool. I mean, you grew up with us.
Yeah.
We're a very tight-knit group. But, yeah, like, there is, like, undoubtedly, like, some nerves just for the sake of the thing, right? Like,
for sure.
You're just a little nervous. Like, you've never obviously done it before.
Right.
And reactions can go any which way, no matter what. But they're truly the best. Like, I don't think I could do a lot of what I do and have the views that I do without their support and without, like, the foundations that they instilled in me from, like, growing up.
I love that. That's really so awesome.
So, obviously, you're someone very passionate about the things that you believe in and not so much, you know, a dream job or this specific opportunity, but someone who knows what they want and are letting that follow you. So what does that look like as, you know, your aspiration, the end game? Where do you see yourself?
Oh, my God. You guys ask such great questions. You're really making me think. I don't know. I love the emergence of women's sports. Mm-hmm. And that coinciding with my passion for advocacy and nonprofit work, like, I would really aspire to, like, do something really cool in that field in terms of a career. Like I said, I don't really know what that looks like yet. But I think, like, at the end of the day, like, I am just so excited. I don't know if I told Riley this, but lately, like, I am just so giddy all the time. Like, I wake up and I'm just so happy to, like, anything that happens, like I said, we were at a concert last night. It rained all night. It was still, like, one of the most fun times of my life.
Yeah.
Like, everything I'm just seeing just through a different lens of, like, just, like, being alive, being awake, and, like, just really being happy. And I think that's a good place to just try to keep myself because I'm doing what I love. So it's, like, continually growing, but, like, keeping, like, the positivity and just figuring out what's next, like, one day at a time.
And encouraging others to make those changes necessary to have that type of mindset, too, is really key.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels crazy. But in the best way, like, I really am just, I don't even know.
So day by day. So happy to be alive, babe. So happy to be alive.
That's what it feels like. Yeah.
I'm like, share a little bit.
No, literally, you're like, give me the positivity. Let it rub off. Right. No, I love that. And, you know, I think we heard it here first, like, when there's this, like, amazing women's sports nonprofit started, we're gonna know who did it because, like, incredible. But, you know, we do like to wrap up this show with one pretty key question at the end.
Yes, tell us your advice for women in sports, Gen Z in general, people advocating themselves.
Yeah, so I think the piece of advice I had is very similar to that I gave on a panel in March of just being your own best advocate.
Yeah,
I think it's really important. And Gen Z is kind of really taking off with it, especially, like, in the corporate workplace and doing, like, a lot of really hard adult things and you're just kind of starting out, is that it's definitely worth it to stick to your morals and stick to your values and really speak for yourself in any situation. So I think even though it can be really scary and really hard, I think it's definitely, like, a fight worth picking.
Yeah, absolutely. That's wonderful. Okay, it's everybody's favorite part of the show, which is our Roman Empires. That was my drum roll without drumming on the table. Anyway, so let's kick it off. Libby has a pretty sentimental one today, so let's kick it off
with
Libby.
I'm gonna get a little sappy. My mom has been crocheting lately, probably since COVID, and she's so talented. It's crazy. She makes bags, stuffed animals, like, decorations. I remember at Christmas she made a crocheted, like, light, like, Christmas lights and hung it up all over our house. It was adorable. She's making Halloween stuff right now.
It's legitimately incredible, actually.
I love it so much. She always has something new to show me, and it always looks so much better. But the thing that I really want to talk about is how much she doubts herself. It's crazy.
Real.
She doesn't think that it's good. She is like, oh, you know, whatever. And I'm like, Mom, you could sell this for so much. Like,
we're like, open an Etsy shop, girlfriend. Like, you're crazy. And no, seriously, like, she gave me a crocheted bag and she, like, lined it with this really pretty lining. It's like little rainbow on the outside. It's so beautiful. I love it so much. And I just am like, girl, you're so talented. And I told her, I was like, can you make me a ghost for Halloween? Because I want a little crocheted ghost.
I'm so jealous. Can she make me something?
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Listen up. You got it. You got a new order coming in from Maisie.
Right.
I know you're listening right now.
It's awesome. But I think it's a good reminder for me that that imposter syndrome and kind of self-doubt exists at any age.
Yeah.
And we always have to be constantly striving to get over that. And I'm like, even to my own mom right now, I know you're listening. Hi, Mom. I love you.
Hi, Mom.
But I'm like, I'm so proud of you. And I love that I'm able to help push her in that way and hype her up. And
that's
I
so
hope
sweet.
She keeps making awesome stuff because I love it.
Aww. Oh my gosh.
Well, now I'd like to talk about Subway. So let's kick it over to the sandwich shop. And no, this is actually legitimately my Roman Empire.
Great memories
so,
there.
No, I know, right? So for those of you who don't know, I was a hashtag sandwich artist when I was in high school. I will go on record saying that I made the best sandwiches. Like, I did.
I believe it, too.
And I'm sorry. Sarah Muir, if you're listening, like, you also made really good sandwiches. And I'm really proud of you. So we can be tied for that. But
I was a customer, and I can confirm she made a great sandwich.
But here's what I really want to talk about Subway. I have an unhealthy addiction to Subway tuna. And listen, Libby and everyone else in my life clowns me for this. Like, I told Libby I was going to talk about this on the podcast, and she started making throw up sounds. Like, I'm like, girl. Like,
I won't do it to you right now.
But I'm like, you guys don't understand. Like, here's the thing. from working there, I have the very unique perspective of, like, you know, the ins and outs of the business and, like, what's good and what's kind of gross and, like, whatever, which I will not put Subway on blast. But what I will say is that the Subway tuna is not gross. It is prepared so nice. It is prepared so nice. Like, I don't even know what else to say.
Subway,
like,
lover.
It's so good.
I love eating Subway, but I just refuse to believe you. And I'm sorry.
And it's fine. Well, you're a vegetarian, so, like, you're allowed to not believe me about
the
tuna.
I know, but I still have opinions on meats, and I feel very strongly.
No, but I will tell you, like, the way I prepare my sandwich is I always just get, like, a little 6-inch or a foot long if I'm feeling fancy and crazy. I just put on the tuna, put on some cheese, all my little veggies, like some spinach, cucumber, green pepper, jalapeno, banana pepper. I load it up because I make it my way.
And cheese alone is crazy to me. I'm sorry.
Okay, but right. It's not. Okay, I will say I'll put a tuna melt on blast any day because I think tuna needs to be served cold. I do not like hot tuna. That is disgusting.
So do you do the cheese first, like on the bread?
I don't melt the cheese, babe.
Oh.
Yeah, so here's where changing. It gets. Yeah, I know. Here's not where the perspective changes.
But a little.
So it's like I sometimes will toast the bread so that the bread's a little bit crispy, but then I'll wait till the bread is cool. I'll, like, let it sit for a second, and then I put the tuna and the cheese and all my veggies on there, and then it's pretty good.
Right, spoken like a true artist.
Right. See, right. It is an art form. Subway sandwich making is an art form. That is why we were called sandwich artists.
Everything is art, and you solidified it.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Anyway, that's mine. Subway tuna is really good, and everyone
and
who clowns me can leave me alone. Anyway. Maisie, your turn. What are you thinking about?
I really don't know how I could possibly follow that up. I will say I have been watching Agatha all along, and I'm pretty obsessed.
Oh, girl.
Us too, a little.
Us too.
And I just, Aubrey Plaza, Catherine Hahn.
Oh, my
and
God.
I will follow it up with just sapphic shows in general. I love. Can we please stop canceling them?
Yeah, real, that part.
Yeah.
Literally, I feel like that. Those are the first on the chopping block, and they should be the last on the chopping block.
Right. And so I just bring sapphic shows back and keep them on the air, please. Mm-hmm. I am begging.
And obviously, like, the finale of Agatha All Along has not come out yet, but Aubrey Plaza did say in an interview that it was going to be very gay.
Right.
And I'm so ready.
I'm so ready.
I'm right. Seated. I'm sat. I'm ready for it.
I've been.
I love it.
And I can't wait to see the reveal of who Teen is because I kind of think it's Wiccan. All my Marvel fans out there, like, comment, subscribe who you think Teen is. Anyway, Maisie, thank you so much for such a wonderful discussion.
Thank you
were an incredible guest.
Oh my gosh, truly, thank you guys so much for having me. I had so much fun.
Oh, yay. We want to thank Maisie Crandall, our guests on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is the wonderful and amazing Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcast.
Bye, besties!
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.